Columbia 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit. That's a band called The New Up, and a song called Arkansas. We'll hear a little bit more from The New Up, as well as one of my other female-fronted bands called The Boon throughout the program tonight. Music that you've heard over the last couple months, actually, but I wanted to feature a couple of my favorite female vocalists tonight. So we're going to do that on the program. And it is Radio Orbit, about 5 minutes after 11 p.m. on the 3rd of September now, 2007. We do this every Monday night from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. in the morning, and we'll do it again tonight. All right? Before we get going with the program, we always say thank you, as we should. Tonight, Corey, doing a little KOPN radio theater. And Corey will be sitting in for the next few weeks for sure, maybe permanently, I don't know, we'll have to see, but certainly for the next few weeks throughout September, she'll be bringing story time to you, 10 p.m., an hour before this program, so you can turn into, or tune in, I should say, to KOPN and listen to Corey do some radio story time every Monday, 10 p.m., an hour before this program. Before that, Kelvin and Jason do it up, jazz plus blues equals harvest in the air. Tech Radio keeps us up on all the amazing and fast-changing events in technology, I guess, and gadgetry. I mean, these guys are all over all these amazing things that are happening, and you got to be paying attention to a whole bunch of different areas of endeavor. if you want to really get a good picture for what's going on. It's very easy to look at one particular area of science or technology or, you know, biology or chemistry or and the developments in any one of these particular fields and go, well, yeah, it's pretty interesting what's happening in this field, but where it really gets interesting is when you start to pull back and realize that the changes that you're seeing in any particular field are happening in every field. And the synergies between these things are where it really gets interesting and unpredictable and improbable and, frankly, you know, Katie bar the door at this point. I don't think anyone has a clue to what's been unleashed on this planet right now. And we're just all sort of spectators to some amazing, amazing experiment or creation or random happenstance, whatever you want to call it, however you, you know, define it epistemologically or, you know, ideologically. The point is something very wild seems to be happening on this planet, and we seem to be right in the middle of it here at the beginning of the 21st century. So, anyway, wonderful to be a part of it. Before Tech Radio, we have Jeff Wheeler. He starts things off every Monday with Uncommon Light, 3 to 5 p.m., good music, good talk, rocking good radio on a September Monday, KOPN, your imagination station. Glad to be here with you and a part of it all, okay? All right, thanks very much to everyone who joined in last week. Had a great time with John Major Jenkins, another wonderful program with John. I'm always thrilled to have him on the air. He's absolutely amazing and, to my mind, certainly, if not the, you know, one of the most important scholars on the planet right now with regard to the ancient Maya, their calendrics, and what it all might mean. So anyway, thanks so much, John, for taking the time to be on the program last week. We love you, and we'll do it again hopefully before the end of the year, I think, okay? We also had music from a wonderful Colorado band, a little bit of tribal psychedelic rock and roll for you all. The band is called Canal. And if you missed either the talk or the music, you can hop on the web, go over to my website at MikeHagan.com, and you can download the program over there in the program archives, and you can also go to the music archives and find information about the musicians that were featured on the program last week and any other week, okay? All right, so anyway, thanks to Canal, thanks to John Major Jenkins for doing it up last week, and if you missed the program, go and grab it, share it with your friends, okay? Tonight, we will have Susan Renison. Susan Renison on the program. She's the author of a book that is very interesting called Tuning the Diamonds. And she's written a lot of stuff that's up there on the web as well. You can find information a little bit beforehand here on the website at www.susanrenison. That's Susan Renison, R-E-N-N-I-S-O-N, susanrenison.com. And you can get a leg up on the other folks if you go sneak on over there in the next 45 minutes or so before we have her on the air. But certainly, Susan Renison, an interesting woman doing some good work and coming to us tonight from the Netherlands or Norway is the actual country that we'll be talking to her from, but up there in the northern parts of Europe. So tune in another 45 minutes, stick around. Susan Renison, author of Tuning the Diamonds, coming up in just about 45, 50 minutes, okay? All right, what else? Well, I should say that I lost all my notes for the show tonight, so I'm sort of winging it, and I'm looking at the notes from last week, and it's more confusing to look at those than it is to actually just try to think off the top of my head what I was going to talk about tonight. So there I have I bare my soul to y'all and let you know that we're totally flying blind tonight, although I do have the benefit of the website and all this stuff, and you know I can ad-lib it pretty good if I have to. So anyway, what we'll do here is give me an opportunity to at least get some semblance of a orderly situation going here at the station. And in the meantime, I will play another piece of music from a band called The Boon. As I mentioned earlier, I'm going to play some songs tonight from two bands. The first one you heard was called The New Up. They're from San Francisco, and I actually featured them on the program, I don't know, maybe a month and a half ago or so, something like that. And they have a great sense of style, I think, and also a female vocalist who I think is really great. And that's what these two bands have in common tonight. The Boon, another wonderfully fronted female band and a great vocalist, too. And we'll hear a little bit from them right now. This song is called The Mermaid Song. The Boone is actually from Kansas City. And they've actually been to town here. I've had the pleasure of seeing them play live. And hopefully, again, even though I think they're performing under a different title than the old name of the band here. So, at any rate, this is The Mermaid Song. It's from The Boone. The CD was called Fool's Gold, released last year, I think, on Blinking Light Records. Okay, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. We'll have Susan Renison at the top of the hour. And in the meantime, this is The Boone.
Like the fish. There's a sailor at my door, and I don't know his name. He talks like an angel, he's drunk all the same. There's a sailor at my door, I need the place to crash. He's been sitting on my flowers, digging in my trash, covered in yarn and cigarette ash. Says he has a message for me. Yes, it's covered in yarn and cigarette ash. Says he has a message for me. He's covered in yarn and he's saying a girl skin sailing on the ship. Tell the genie gonna grant me a wish on. Teeth like the shark, feet like the fish. Teeth like the shark, feet like the fish. Teeth like the shark, feet like the fish. You're a good swimmer, you can steal my kiss.
All right, that's The Boone. The song is called The Mermaid Song. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Mid-Missouri source for in-depth news, diverse talk, all kinds of music from all around the world. And we'll do a little bit of that tonight, as we always do. In the meantime, we have a couple guests in the studio with me here. If I can find out which microphones are which. I think it's 3 and 4. Say hello there, guys. We got Matt and Eric. Hello.
Hello out there.
All right. Eric.
Is my mic up? Oh, yeah, I can definitely hear it.
Say it again. Say hi, Eric.
Hi, how are you doing?
Say it again.
Hi, how are you doing?
All right. Matt?
What's up?
All right, everybody. We got these two gentlemen here, and we're going to talk a little bit about a play that's happening at the Maplewood Barn Theater. Tell us about it. What's the name of the play?
Yes, we are doing Oklahoma. We're closing out the Maplewood Barn Community Theater season. This is the 2007 season. It's our 34th season. And we're doing the crown jewel of American musical theater, otherwise known as Oklahoma, Rodgers and Hammerstein's musical. It's definitely a phenomenal show. This is going to be our final week, September 7th through the 9th. It's going to be at 8 p.m. And with this show, it's definitely a classic. I mean, even though it was written back in 1943, this is a show that definitely applies to today. It talks about forming a community and the toughest times. Mm-hmm. It also talks a lot about just trying to overcome a lot of obstacles within the territory, just figuring out how to grow up. There's a lot of threats, a lot of danger with violence, growing up, becoming your own person within this wild, wild west era.
All right. What's your role in the play?
I am the director for the show.
Okay, you're the director, and Matt, who's here, and who, by the way, we'll do a little shameless plug here. Matt does a...
I'm playing the guy...
Hey, hold on, I'm talking.
Okay.
All right, he does a rockabilly show about once a month on Tuesdays from 3:30 to 5 or so, and I sit in there and do rockabilly with him once in a while, but we're not talking about rockabilly tonight. We're talking about this play called Oklahoma, and actually Matt is in that play as well. Mm-hmm. What's your role in the play, Matt?
Playing a dad to two 14-year-old girls, which they don't listen to a word I say.
Oh, that's typical, I guess.
Plus, I'm playing the guy, the same guy. His name's Joe. He's a farmer, and just trying to deal with changes and with the state being made and dealing with the two other people who are trying to pick fights.
Right. Yeah, I get Matt doing a lot of fighting, a lot of stage combat. So Matt had to learn a lot, and he had to learn really fast. So actually, it was a fun time. All the guys in the show had to learn how to do a little bit of stage combat. We have actually three characters in the show who use guns. We definitely have all the guns loaded with blanks.
That's nice to know, if you're out there in the audience at least. How many people actually are involved in the whole orchestration?
We have 25 people in the cast,
wow,
plus another 10 people who are on the production staff, plus we have an orchestra of 9 people, which is one of our largest orchestras.
Wow.
The past few musicals at Maplewood Barn, it's just been a 3-piece orchestra, piano, drums,
mm-hmm,
but
yeah,
we wanted to get the full strings, we wanted to get the whole shebang, because this is Rodgers and Hammerstein, this is Oklahoma, and we wanted to just really impress the audience with this whole community of talent that is just contributing everything to Oklahoma.
All right, you've been on stage now with the play for a couple weeks already?
Yes, we've been on stage for 2 weeks. We've done 6 very successful shows.
Uh-huh.
Actually, I would say 5.5 of them have actually been outdoors. Our opening night, there was...
It rained, I remember, yeah.
Yeah, actually, we did finish the show, though. What happened was, after intermission, we let them do the Act 2 opening, and then after Act 2 opening was over, the lightning was getting much closer. It was moving back from Callaway County all the way east into Boone County, and basically I came up on stage and I said, we're going to continue the rest of the show indoors. So about 2/3 of our audience came into the barn, and the entire cast looked at me like I was crazy, like, we can't finish the show, Eric. And I said, yes, you can. We've got a great show, and we can finish it. And all the cast members told me afterwards that it was the best experience of their life, that we actually got together and we did the show indoors. It was a very intimate setting. And I know the audience just really enjoyed it. We had an interesting first night, but I know that everyone really appreciated it when we got back to doing the whole show outdoors. Especially since we had this one scene where we used the whole set. We've got the barn as part of the set, and we've got Matt out of a second-story window laughing and belching. It's really interesting. We used this whole full set, which we couldn't use during the first day because we were indoors.
All right. Well, for people who haven't been at the Maplewood Barn Theater, it's a great venue out there, and there's a lot of cool people that are working out there and participating in a lot of these productions. I've seen a couple of the plays out there in the last couple of years, and I know a lot of people that are involved with them in and out, maybe not in every production, but certainly, you know, sort of come and go through the revolving barn door there,
mm-hmm,
as it were. But anyway, it's great. And so this is Friday, Saturday, September 7th.
8th and 9th, yes.
So Sunday, too. Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
7th, 8th, and 9th. 8 p.m. at Nifong Park. That's where it's located, actually. Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
All right. And $8 for the general public, $6 for students and seniors.
Mm-hmm.
And
kids under 10 get in for free.
Kids under 10
yes,
get in
they
for
do.
Free. If you're 12, act like you're 10.
Yeah, just lie about your age.
Yeah, just lie. They won't ask for an ID yet. We haven't gone that far to the Nazi side of things. We're not asking 12-year-olds for their IDs, at least not yet. And it's not going to get that far, I don't think. All right, lawn chairs, too, or a blanket or something like that's always good if you go out there to the Maplewood Barn Theater. And bring a bottle of wine or a picnic dinner or something. You guys are pretty cool with people just sort of doing their thing out there. So.
Yeah, definitely. We want this to be a full theater experience. I mean, we want everybody who comes out to Maplewood Barn just to enjoy themselves. I mean, have a picnic. I mean, people have brought fried chicken out there. They've brought sushi dinners. There have been people who have brought wine bottles. I mean, it's just a chance to just relax, have fun, and also while you're at it, see an amazing production. I mean, with the level of professionalism that we have with the cast, with the leads, and with the ensemble, I would definitely put us up against any professional theater within the state of Missouri.
All right. Well, that said, we will say thank you, and I think you got a pair of tickets or something you want to give away, maybe?
Yes, I do. Actually, I don't have the two tickets physically with me, but they will be waiting.
I'll just get a name or something like that, and I can have them either call or email, whatever else. You got a contest or something that you want, or a question maybe?
Yes, I do have a trivia question.
All right, the trivia question
for those listeners, if you are the first caller, you win the two free tickets, the two complimentary tickets to see Oklahoma this weekend. The trivia question is, Oklahoma was originally based on a play. And what was the name of the play that was written in 1931 that Oklahoma was based on?
Okay, what was the name of the play that the play, Oklahoma, was based on? And give me a call here. The number is 573-874-5676 or 1-800-895-5676 if you're outside of the 573 area code, but still in Missouri. The 800 number will not work outside of Missouri. So 573-874-5676 if you're local or outside of the state. And the first caller here, as soon as I go to a break here, which we're going to do shortly, play another piece of music here, let us know if you know the name of the play that Oklahoma was based upon. And we'll give you a couple tickets to go see that show sometime this weekend out there at the Maplewood Barn Theater. Okay?
No, if you're a cast member, do not call. If family of cast member, that's okay.
Yeah, we definitely want to make it clear.
The cast members are going to be there anyway, probably. Anyway, all right. Thank you, guys. Eric, appreciate it. Thanks for doing the work out there at the theater. I think it's great.
Thank you very much. And definitely to those of you who are listening, definitely come out to Columbia. It's going to be a phenomenal weekend, and you get a chance to see what we've been working on. And just that this is probably one of the best productions of Oklahoma that you will see in this lifetime.
All right. There you have it, everybody. It's Eric and Matt from Oklahoma.
Tonight.
Thanks, Matt. Take care of yourself, all right? Sure. And once again, give me a call in just a second here, 573-874-5676, if you'd like to go see that show sometime this weekend. In the meantime, this is The New Up. The song is called Rose Colored Shades. Stick around. It's Mike. We're going to shift gears here in a few minutes. We got some live spoken word poetry coming up and Susan Renison at the top of the hour. Some more good music in the meantime. Once again, Rose Colored Shades. This is The New Up. Back in a minute. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Gentlemen, that's a song called Rose Colored Shades. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. It is about 11:30 or so on the 3rd of September, 2007. And thank you, everyone, for joining us tonight. As always, pleasure to be with you all here. Whether you're listening on KOPN over the traditional airways, or over the internet, live or otherwise, every Monday we do the program here from the beautiful studios at KOPN, lovely downtown Columbia, Missouri. And we stream the show live as well on the web at kopn.org. Just click on the Listen Live button. You'll get a nice, fancy internet streaming audio that you can listen to over your computer anywhere on the planet. So thanks to everyone who makes it happen live on the radio, live on the net, and appreciate everything everybody does to make it possible, including my good friend Larry Noriger, the web wizard, who takes care of my own website over there at MikeHagan.com. He's wonderful, and I appreciate all the work that he does for me, okay? All right, everybody else out there, if you're sharing art, music, poetry, whatever it might be, I appreciate it. Thanks for it. Send more. The music that you're hearing tonight, of course, is music that was sent in by artists or artists that I ran into somewhere at a club or a concert venue or something sometime over the last year or so. The New Up I saw actually here in town maybe 6 months ago or so down there on 9th Street at the Blue Fugue. And I also saw a band called The Boon maybe sometime within the last year for sure here in town. Anyway, both of those bands are bands you're hearing tonight. You probably wouldn't hear otherwise. So if you're a musician out there and you have 8 or 9 songs, that I can choose from, get a hold of me. Send me your music. And if it works with the program, I'll feature you for an entire evening on the radio show here, and you know, you get to hear 8 or 9 of your songs played throughout the course of 3 hours. Try to mix it in good with a conversation or an interview that we do typically here, you know, from midnight until 2 a.m. We usually interview people, and so I try to choose music and conversation that fits together, and it's very cool when it works right, and you can be a part of that and just share your music with me. Now, if you have one song, you know, send me your one song, and I'd be glad to, you know, maybe introduce it or something on a night when we do something like that. But, you know, I'm looking for people who have, you know, at least, you know, a little bit of a portfolio that they can share with me, because I'm interested in sort of, you know, showcasing an artist and, you know, different sides of them that you might not normally see. You get to hear one song, you know, on most of the other radio stations. Here I'm looking at playing, you know, the bulk of an entire album over the course of one night and let people get a real feel for what the artist is doing. So anyway, that's what we do here, and I love to listen to the music that you send in to me, and there's no offense meant or, you know, no offense at all meant if I don't play your stuff, you know. Call me and I'll tell you why. You know, don't be afraid. Send me an email. Say, hey, jackass, how come you didn't play my friggin' music? I'll tell you, I don't know. Well, maybe I didn't even hear it. Maybe it got lost in the shuffle for all I know these days. I get so much email. I get so much stuff. My mailbox is overflowing. I'm trying to, you know, I got 2 kids and a regular job. And that's my excuse, okay? Anyway, no sympathy required. I love it when you send stuff to us. Same thing goes with art, visual art. We're going to hear some great poetry here in just a bit. And in fact, I have a section up on... In fact, I think what we'll do is bring Eddie on the air real fast here and say hello anyway. Ed, hi.
How you doing, Mike?
Got you there. And we have Pasha on another microphone here. You want to say hello or no?
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good.
Speak right in the microphone if you don't mind. That way everyone here can hear you nicely clearly. We met earlier tonight at the Blue Fugue. They do open mic night on Monday nights down there, and you never know what you're going to get. It's always great. There's sort of a usual crowd that's down there, and you'll hear, you know, certainly some of the same stuff, but you also get a mix of new stuff every week. And there's not enough time anymore. We need to do it more than once a week, I think, or we need to find another venue in town to jump on board with this, because tonight I ran into Eddie, and he did a great spoken word piece up there on the stage, and invited him to come down here to share it with you all, because I was, you know, I thought I dug it that much. So anyway, one of the things that I do is I have a place on my website for poetry, and I call it the Poets Corner, and anybody that has something that they like and they write, you know, I'll put it up there for sure and share it with other people. So anyway, thank you for coming down, and thank you for sharing your art with us.
Anytime, man.
It's great. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name is Eddie English. I've been in Columbia since 2002. I came here to go to school. I was in school for 3.5 years, realized I was an artist, realized I was a poet. I've been doing it ever since. What you saw was a little excerpt from my first book called Ant Life. And I started writing it actually the day after Hurricane Katrina. And I finished it last summer.
Wow, just about a year old?
Yeah, just about a year old.
Wow, that was a, you know, I mean, you can pick so many events over the last 6-7 years that have just been so unbelievable and some just remarkable, both good, bad, and ugly, the whole bit has been thrown at us, it seems. But anyway, what were you studying before you decided that you were going to become an artist? Or, you know, that's a bad choice of words, before you realized you were an artist.
English, go figure.
There you go.
I was studying English.
Well, you know, language is an art in and of itself. And, I mean, what you're doing with your writing is actually, you know, a mastering of the language. And, you know, how we use words is actually much more important than people actually ever realize.
Definitely.
We've really been naive in the understanding of how language defines our reality and our perceptions of the way the world really works, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't we share a little bit with the folks here and let them see what it's all about. I'm all about the show-me state thing.
Let's,
you know, I don't
it.
Talk. I mean, I talk a lot, but I try to show as well. And I'm going to put on a little piece of music here. And we'll let that get going, and you just sort of jump in whenever you like. And this is compliments of my friends, Spangl.
The haiku was invented and developed over hundreds of years in Japan to be a complete poem in 17 syllables and to pack in a whole vision of life in three short lines. A Western haiku need not concern itself with the 17 syllables, since Western languages cannot adapt themselves to the fluid syllabic Japanese. I propose that the Western haiku simply say a lot in three short lines in any Western language. Jack Kerouac. Major cities are bacteria, dangerously close to the water. In order to fuck image, I first made love with virgin imagery. Poems are lifeblood, vainly trapped by blue bars, flowing red on air. Characters in this dream, us fully lucid, pinched guy. When I prayed up to the sky, light of the world got in my eye. The mind is a clam, shut netted and pried open, moments strung like pearls. Small doses daily, we inject ourselves with sleep, death's only vaccine. Drunken car crash tilts a foam pole, and for our sins, the void bears its cross. Standing in the street, staring at the wreck, I grow cross, bearing this void. I am my mother's only son, flame and ray, dead cheats, night cowers. Concrete is too pale, carpet has bad hair, all bias grounds are flat. Trying to Google God, caught in a wireless net, humans are computers. Our religion has become too cavalier, adults worship King James. Leaning on the door, making out in this bar, vomit on the handle. Horrible with kids, fed kibble and myths, race is man's pet unicorn. Like the lives of flies or city trains to be buffed, so go our egos. She shows off new clothes while wearing sweatpants with me, living in the now. Telepathic whales make SeaWorld the planet of intelligent life. I'm trying to save the world, but my girl never turns off the TV. This reality is a cartoon with a closed door behind each door. Haiku from the fridge. Apple is fragrant like my little rich ocean. Motion pictures would be impossible if we saw everything. If I melt their wax, how can any MC attempt to hold a candle? Other planets plug their ozone holes with pure gold sliced thin as bedsheets. Rotten red onions in the black community. Produce prejudice. In a fossil fuel museum, driving towards sunset, tank of liquid dinosaurs. Astral travel, $2.79 a gallon, Missouri asleep. Every crucifixion's a broken swastika, we've been double-crossed. Cash in my tank, gas for their banks, never trust numbers on screens. As long as the earth is scared of change, I will continue to throw quarters. It's hard to be unknown and free when your genes are famous and barred. These haiku are in English, if I don't trick you, it's not poetry. Carnivores don't enjoy vegan food like crackheads don't get high off weed. We're all inside a box, mine just didn't come with a Nike swoosh. Ain't no radio programs, black church, damn God, or double negatives. Just because you blaze 2 10-sacks doesn't make your poems paradigms. Banks are closed on Sunday, but I thought we had freedom of religion. English eddies until the whirlwind effect splashes on spiral notebooks. I am a doubter, trapped in AD, searching for when I was born. Oil, a 2-mile drive, and one e-transaction later, we found fresh water. While you struggle to be the best, I'm happy with the most literate. I don't want to be anything like someone who is that wrong for you. I am a pyramid washed with lime reflecting sunlight toward the sky. The earth is vinyl, my feet are needles, people must face the music. Half these conscious poets don't even qualify as conscious humans. If you ever speak with Robert Galvin, surrender and buy the AIDS cure.
You've got mail.
From electric trees, thoughts pluck like apples, golden era delicious. If it's an asset and a liability, money can't exist. B-boy block letters brush big bills in back pockets bombing Benjamins. Business casual, no 401k, NBA corporate culture. This notebook constitutes probable cause. It's a good thing pigs can't read. Our night is too now, this night is too new, each night I crawl on moleskin. How will you describe snow to your grandchildren once it's become extinct? I used to like most meat, but I refuse to eat sodium nitrate. We are merely acting our age, independent Aquarius. From 500 feet up, Giza looks just like the Mercedes-Benz sign. The man who ends his worldview is the man who ends the world. All lands owned by the U.S. government would fit on Marshall Isle. You can turn down the volume when this reality gets too dense. There is only one disease, it's called birth, and we will all die from it. I'm a vegan poet on leather notepads who can't count syllables. P.O.S., Sage Francis, Saul Williams, Steady P, Technique. My top five. Why'd the chicken cross the road? To escape the KFC farm. You're the Goyim simply because you can't define Goyim. Until they shave Musawi's beard, he has yet to be fully punished. God is a 6-billion-piece jigsaw puzzle, and everybody fits. When the bigger fish get fried, we'll all carry crumbs back to the anthill. Ant Life, by Eddie English.
Right on. Ant Life, Eddie English. All right, Eddie, thanks so much.
Anytime, Mike.
And that is that's an excerpt from a book that you're writing, or that you've written?
I've written. It's actually, it's about 200 haiku, probably 17 prose poems and like 20 illustrations that I did myself. Right. I'm a painter and an artist.
Really?
Also.
What sort of...
They're charcoal sketches. I do
charcoal
pastel.
Charcoal sketches, all right.
I deal mostly in charcoal and pastel.
Huh. Well, it's great stuff, and I appreciate you doing it.
Yeah, I do.
And now, what else is happening around town that allows people like you that are doing this sort of stuff the opportunity to share their work with people?
Usually, I was just at the Artisan last Thursday. They had a spoken word night. We need more poets to come out. There was only 4 of us there.
Mm-hmm. And the crowd, I'm sure people dig it, man.
Yeah, I mean, people dig it when you get them in there to see it.
You just got
to
get them in there.
It's hard to get people in there.
Hmm.
There's Mad Real Mondays at Sapphire Lounge. Sapphire's just back up for business, so everybody come out Monday night.
Yeah, Sapphire was shut down for a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I was wondering what happened because it was a... He was a well-liked guy, and they said that he lost his license, but I sort of doubted that that was really what was going on. But
yeah, I mean, there's a lot of room. I really don't even know what really happened.
Right.
I know they started back up a couple weeks ago. Usually, I stand downtown, scream my poetry out loud.
Right, stand on the corner and do your thing.
Yeah, sometimes I go to Speaker Circle.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's you know, it's actually a great town for art.
Yeah.
And although... You know, we have this image in the United States and in the West, in the whole world, actually, right now, of the starving artist, you know.
Yeah.
And it's an honest concept because art doesn't get the attention that it deserves. And artists, you know, don't get six-figure incomes for the most part unless they're fancy artists that, you know, that have bought into the whole scam in New York City or something
that.
But in a town like Columbia... I don't know, art in general, whether it's music or whether it's, you know, spoken word or literature or poetry or visual art, it is getting attention, and I think that through, I don't know, it doesn't take that many people, you know, to raise awareness for it, and when people catch on to it, it's like anything else. It's a virus, and it feels good, and it's cool to find stuff that you like, and it's also to talk about stuff you don't like, you know, or fun to talk about the stuff you don't, whatever. Art generates this conversation and emotion and all that stuff, and that's what your music and your words did with me earlier, and that's why I wanted you to come down here and do it again on the air. So anyway, I wish you the best and keep pushing it and get your friends, you know, who are artists. We're all artists. It's just a matter of determining what our particular art is.
Exactly.
You know, for me it happens to be radio, and you know, people say, well, is that really art? Well, yes, it's my creative expression, you know. And maybe my art is to get other people's art out there to other people. You know, it's part of the whole thing. So, anyway, I encourage all my listeners, like I always do, and, you know, my guests tonight, to keep it on and keep doing it up and push it harder than you ever thought you could push it, and make sure you push it with your friends. And if they're not pushing it, go find new friends. You know, you got better things to do than hang out with a bunch of fuddy-duddies that are trying to drag us into the same ditch they're in. No offense to all my brothers out there. Anyway, I got a little bit of a schedule here. I got to get a woman on the phone from Norway and talk with her for the rest of the night. But like I say, it's been a pleasure. And let me give your email address out here if anybody's interested in getting a hold of Eddie here, okay? It is pdkgf4@mizzou.edu. That's pdkgf4@mizzou.edu. Great literature, spoken word, poetry coming from my friend Eddie. I'm pleased to meet you tonight.
Yeah,
thanks very much.
Great to meet you too, Mike.
All right, take care of yourselves, and come on down to the Fugue. I'm sure I'll see you again, okay?
All the time.
All right, cheers. All right, everybody, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. I'm going to throw a piece of music on here from The Boon. This is a song that is called Good Company. How about it? That's what I've had so far tonight and what I intend to have for the rest of the show. So enjoy this. I'll get Susan Renison on the line. We'll come back, do a quick space weather, and catch up with a couple things in the news, tell you about some upcoming guests, and then we'll have Susan Renison at the top of the hour, okay? Mike Hagan, Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. This one's called Good Company from the Boon. One more time, thanks to Eddie for doing his poetry with us here, and the guys from the Maplewood Barn Theater for talking with us a little bit about the play Oklahoma.
Just another day in the life of a steady boy. Sex toy, poodle hair, mug racers, truck driving, scuba divers, losing our religion to a box of chicken biscuits like it's quicksand. Concrete, sleeping with the fish feet. Don't sweat the big stuff, enough is never quite enough. Love cake, beef steak, give my poor heart a break. Diamond mind, camouflage, underwater espionage. Super fly, Spanish fly, I spy a white lie. I spy a leprechaun sitting on my front lawn. He's caught in a bear trap. Take a bath, you smell like crap. Sun, come, shine down on me. Park and see you, gray sky. I think I'm seeing things, the same black girl. Back waiting for me. I'm gonna head west till I hit the sea. And then I'm going underway, can't find me. I'm going underway, can't find me. With the sharks and the shells and the underwater caves and the blood belly comb, jelly whale bone graves. Who the hell's that? Salvation say. Gonna meet my maker beneath the waves. When I caught the vibe, some stranger staring. His white eyes were wearing spots on my boots. I get the red hair, not crazy, but not stupid. I had a back full of data, got a cousin named Cupid. If he looks at your mama, how you look in my back, she'd have a heart attack. That's it. Step back, I'm packed with a few. Never mind, like a gate to. Lots of love to give, cause that's what I do. Things for the tent. See, you gotta give love to survive this place. So you gotta give love, gotta live love, gotta make love. You gotta make love like a cake, yeah. Make love. And a heat is atop a tight loop. Above the hill fires, below the high flies. Just like truth between all the lies. Just another day, 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 just another day. In the life of a playboy, sex toy, poodle hair, muck rake, and truck diving, scuba diving, losing all religion to a box of chicken biscuits, like it's quicksand. Sleeping with the fish feet. Don't sweat the big stuff. Nothing's never quite enough. Love came, you stay. Give my poor heart a break. Thank you.
That's the Boon, everybody. Good music from Kansas City. The song is called Good Company. And from a CD called Fool's Gold. Thanks for the music to the girls and guys in that band. And thanks all of you for listening to the program tonight. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. About 8 minutes before the top of the hour. Now on, still the 3rd of September, coming quickly upon the 4th of September, though, and we'll be there in just a few minutes, and when we get to the 4th of September, we will also get to our guest of the evening, Susan Renison, wonderfully interesting lady that we're talking to live from her home in Northern Europe, up there in Norway, and she's written an amazingly interesting book called Tuning the Diamonds, and we'll talk with her about her book and her research and her life and whatever else we decide to talk with her about tonight, okay? All right, in the meantime, a couple things to catch up on here. It is, I tell you what, let me tell you a little bit about some guests that are coming up over the next few weeks. As I said tonight, Susan Renison, author of Tuning the Diamonds, that's just in a few minutes here. Next week we'll have Kent Daniel Benkowski. You know, I don't normally do the political thing, but every year around 9/11, I'll do something special that has to do with the September 11th events of 2001 until I'm satisfactorily convinced that we've been told the truth about what's going on and what happened on that day. So anyway, Kent Daniel Benkowski, we'll speak with him. We'll do a little bit of a 9/11 special next week. The week after that, the 17th of September, Bruce Raphael and Rush Allen. Again, more follow-up on the two amazing shows we've done with Bruce Raphael. This time Rush Allen will be joining him, but you know, Bruce has been in China for the last few years and in many, many different places around the planet before that for the last 20 or so on this amazing journey and quest, all seemingly culminating very soon. And we'll continue to have that conversation about the Lionsgate cosmology and this new amazing discovery in the heavens that happened. Well, I guess it was announced on my birthday, actually, on August 15th, the star that they're calling Mira, M-I-R-A, Myra or Mira, but it's just a remarkable display up there in the heavens. If you're interested in that, you can go over to Kent Stedman's site, actually, at cyberspaceorbit.com. Kent's always doing a wonderful job of keeping up on the happenings up there in the skies above our heads. But anyway, Bruce Raphael and Rush Allen, very interested in these things as well, and say that none of it is, you know, for naught, that there's no such thing as coincidences, and this whole idea of watching the heavens for signs is a real one, and there are many signs in the heavens these days. We just had a wonderful full lunar eclipse last week, about a week ago, on a full moon. That was last Monday night, Tuesday morning, when we were on the air with John Jenkins, as a matter of fact. Susan and I were just talking off the air, and she mentioned John Major Jenkins, of course, who's a wonderful scholar and a friend of mine, personal friend of mine, who, you know, we visit with when we go to Colorado and who stays with us when he comes here. And, you know, John and I have been friends for a long time, long before the 2012 thing got hip. And he is the real deal. And anyway, amazing some of the synchronicities that are happening with regard to all of this stuff. You know, we were mentioning last week when John and I were on the air that, you know, he and I didn't plan to have a show on a full moon lunar eclipse night, but it just happened that way. And, of course, what were we talking about with John? Well, we talk about galactic alignments and all this sort of stuff. So, you know, it really was a very fitting night to talk with John. And I'm sure something accordingly fitting is going on tonight, whether we know it or not, with Susan Renison, who will be joining us in just a few minutes here. And she has some very interesting things to talk about with regard to planetary evolution and, I guess, evolution in general and how it affects all kinds of different systems, whether they're biological, technological, planetary, all kinds of different things. So, what else? 24th of September, Brian Trent. Brian Trent wrote a book a few years ago called Remembering Hypatia, and I interviewed him, and I am forever grateful to Brian for writing Remembering Hypatia. And he has a new book out. And every time I mention that he's going to be on the show on the 24th of September, I always say that I don't even know the name of his new book because I didn't even ask him. All I know is that he wrote Remembering Hypatia, which was one of the best books I've read in the last 2 or 3 years. And I don't care what he wrote. I'll have him back on the program because I think he's great. And if you haven't read Remembering Hypatia, well, this is one that you should put on your reading list because it is a great story about one of the most remarkable women in human history who has been, up to this point in Western history, essentially wiped from the history books. But thanks to people like Brian Trent, who's a man, by the way, you know, we can, there are good men out here, and there are, you know, we're not all bad. Anyway, he wrote this great book, which tells the story of Hypatia of Alexandria, the last living librarian of the Library of Alexandria, and one of the most respected and brilliant women in the history of humankind. So, anyway, Brian Trent, on the 24th of September, we'll talk with him about his new book, whatever it may be. Dennis McKenna, my good friend, my brother, Dennis McKenna, October 1st. I can't wait to have Dennis back on the air. It's been a long time since we've talked live, and I know a lot of people are looking forward to have Dennis come back and share some of his experiences with them on the program here. So we'll do that with Dr. Dennis on the 1st of October. Jay Widener, I think, on the 8th of October. Dr. Bruce Lipton on the 15th. And after that, who knows? The world may have changed. So we'll just leave it there for now. We'll take a short break here. I'll play a quick piece of music from, let's see, we just played the Boone. And we'll play another song here from the new Up. And let's see, which one? How about In the Next Life? It's a good, fitting topic for tonight. And we'll hear that, and then we'll come back with Susan Redison in just a few minutes here, okay? All right, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. This is the new Up. The song is called In the Next Life.
To Radio Orbit with Mike Hagan on KOPN 89.5 FM.
That's right, everybody. It is Mike Hagan. You are listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. It's a pleasure to be with you tonight. All right, everybody. My guest tonight is named Susan Joy Renison. Susan has spent over 25 years as an alternative free-thinking individual. She has an honors degree in physics and geophysics. She is now an alternative practitioner, an independent researcher, an author, and a speaker. And she's written a book called Tuning the Diamonds, of which we're going to talk a little bit about tonight. Susan is currently residing in a place called Stavanger, Norway. And she comes to us live from there early morning, I guess, 7 o'clock or so, if I'm not mistaken. And so without further ado, that's correct, we will say good morning and welcome to Radio Orbit, Susan Renison. Hi.
Good morning, and thank you very much for the invitation.
Thank you very much for joining us, Susan. I appreciate it. And I would like to say for my listeners out there who are unfamiliar with you and with the program in general, what I typically do when I start off with a new guest who hasn't been on the program before is ask a little bit about themselves. So I'd like to do that with you. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, where you come from, and maybe how you got involved in all this business of planetary evolution and the path that you're on.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, it's difficult to know where to start, really. I've always been interested in spiritual things, right from an early age. My parents sent me to Sunday school when I was 5 years old. When I got to about 15, 16, 17, I decided that I had to go on a search for truth. So I actually call myself a seeker of the truth, and it's something that's very fundamental to how I think and view the world. So I went to university. I have an honors degree in physics and geophysics. I went into business. I started off in the oil industry, but then I went into computing. I'm a very analytical thinker. I'm a problem solver, so I like project management. I went into project management. But I'm a thinker. And I like to do analysis. I like to look at different options and how to view things. So most of my life I've read books. And I'm a very unusual person because even though there is a spiritual side to me, I like to think, but I also use my intuitive abilities as well. So I've had many mystical experiences along the way, right from an early age at the same time. So I've
maybe you could expand on that a little bit. What do you mean mystical experiences at an early age?
I used to pray, and I wouldn't call it meditate, but I had, sometimes I'd have visions, or I'd see pictures, and I'd have some quite profound experiences, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, obviously, with a Christian background, you do tend to get a little bit wary of these things.
you're talking to him a little bit.
Sorry?
I said, you're talking to him. I'm quite familiar with the Christian baggage that is sometimes accompanying
some
of this stuff. So.
That does colour your view of your experiences. And I got married. I had two children. I'm now divorced, by the way. What happened was I left the UK. I was in the United Kingdom. I moved to Italy.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very interesting experience, living in another culture and seeing the history. I was very interested in the history of the church. So going to Italy was fascinating. Having opportunities to see the history that's retained there. And then after nearly 3 years, I moved to Norway. So I've been living here in Norway for about 8 years. And again, it's very good to travel because you get a different perspective. Different cultures see different things as being very important, so that helps you to understand what your values are.
I agree, yeah.
So I continued my researching, and what happened was I came across some literature, metaphysical literature, channeling, and I had never been exposed to this before, and I started off with Jane Robertson and various things like that. And then I discovered some modern stuff, and I decided to go check it out. Now, what I decided to do was to use my intuitive abilities. I feel with this sort of stuff, you just can't use your brain. You have to use your intuitive gifts as well. But I had to go and literally sit in the meeting with these people. And I've never been in a New Age meeting, and this is October 2001. And within less than an hour of being at this event, I had a massive mystical experience. I actually raised my kundalini, and I was literally on fire at this event, which was really bizarre for me because I didn't know anything about it. I just did these energy-raising exercises, and I just burst into flames. And it's a case of you can feel it. I couldn't see it, but I could just feel the flames all around me, which was just incredible. But at the same time, I was a bit shocked by this. Now, what actually happened was a month later, I was back in Stavanger, and the Shaolin monks came to Stavanger, and I don't know if you know of the Shaolin monks.
No, maybe you can tell us a little bit about them.
Well, they do, I think they're from China, and they do the most amazing feats, it's just amazing energy thing that they do, and they work with spears and swords and all sorts of stuff. But one of the things that just completely amazed me was that one of the guys had this special thing that he did. He had a needle that's about, 2.5 inches long. And what his feat was to throw this needle through a thick pane of glass. And he made 5 attempts. But when he did, the hole was the size of your finger, your small finger. So, but what he did to actually do this was he raised energy from the earth exactly the same as I'd done to raise my kundalini. He literally drew energy out of the earth. And that was totally amazing to me. I thought, my goodness, he's doing what I did to raise my kundalini. So at that point, I realized that there were these special energies that are not known in the mainstream. I knew nothing about these energies, but these monks knew how to use this energy to do the most amazing things. So I started to, this is at the point where I really started to research, energy phenomena, the whole energy world, subtle bodies, the whole thing. That was the point where I really started to do my research. And that's when I also decided to take my steps into actually understanding these energies. So what happened was I did some training with energy work. Because of my scientific interests, I was asked to write a chapter in someone else's book.
Yeah, I read that actually on your website.
But what happened was I started to think about it and thinking all these years of reading books, I knew an awful lot of things, and I felt that maybe I could give people the benefit of my understanding of reality. So as soon as I started to research, I started to, what I call, put the pieces of the puzzle together. It was like, the way I see things is that it's like a huge jigsaw puzzle, and we all have understanding pieces of the jigsaw puzzle. What I do and the way that I think is I like to make the picture, create the big picture. And so as I continued my research, I started to see how the massive changes taking place in our planet was associated with galactic changes and changes in our solar system, and also the effect on humans. So it went from galactic solar system Earth to human. And I started to see how this is all associated with electromagnetism. Mm. This was, the more I researched and saw the big picture, the more amazed I was. But the thing that really triggered my understanding was seeing the sun and a picture of a massive burst of energy from the sun. And there's an image of a DNA spiral of energy coming from the sun. And at that point, I knew this energy was an energy of spiritual evolution. It just clicked. It just clicked that this was how energy was being delivered to Earth. And most of the energy is coming via the sun, but we're also getting energy from cosmic and galactic sources that are coming directly too as well. So this was quite profound for me, and I just felt as soon as I'd realized what was happening and the impact and why these strange New Age people were doing energy work and were trying to work with their DNA, I just felt I had to write my book, which is what I did.
All right. Well, the book is called Tuning the Diamonds. My guest name is Susan Renison. You can find information about her on the web at Susan Renison, R-E-N-N-I-S-O-N, SusanRenison.com. Let's talk a little bit about the book, and let's start with the title. Why did you call it Tuning the Diamonds?
As an energy practitioner, I learned that there are energy diamond energy fields, and they're actually based on sacred geometry, the octahedron, which is a four-sided configuration of energy. It's like two pyramids back to back. That's an octahedron.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually have them in our energy fields, and they're becoming very important at this time. They have a function of stabilizing energy and stabilizing your subtle energy fields. They're like containers for energy. But in my research, I discovered that they are the perfect receiver and perfect transmitter of divine energies. So as the massive changes are taking place on this planet, evolutionary changes, our energy fields are going to be, we are actually going to be knocked around by these fluctuating currents of energy. And so we need to stay as stable as possible. And these diamonds are going to help us. They're going to help us to stay stable and also to evolve. So what it's doing, they actually act as receivers. Now, in my book, I'm quite odd because I actually equate this to concepts in electrical engineering. The diamond antenna is also the perfect receiver and transmitter of energies, frequencies of light. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's very interesting to me because this is physics, which is what I'm interested in.
Right.
Okay? It's literally physics. And so what I also see the diamonds as interdimensional vortexes of light as well. So I explain this in my book. I explain where this physics comes from, but I also make it appropriate for what's happening on this planet at this time. So tuning the diamonds, there are many diamonds I talk about in my book. I talk about the fact that our galaxies even seem to line up in a sort of octahedron diamond shape. I talk about the diamonds in the Earth, I talk about the diamonds in our energy field. And then I explain where I believe this comes from. So my book is a synthesis of information, because I felt that there was no other book out there that talked about what was happening on the planet, this whole concept of spiritual evolution, and many different concepts that are just very vague. People throw out buzzwords like the grid, the Earth grid. And I wanted to say for a lot of people out there, this is the research that's been done on the grids.
Well,
who says what and why?
That's,
so the book is a synthesis of a lot of information in one place, but in the process, I create the big picture of what's actually happening on the planet.
Well, I'd like to talk a little bit about the grid, because I think that is one of the fundamental parts of the research for people who are unfamiliar or who'd like to have it clarified. Let's talk a little bit about the so-called Earth grid and what it means and what we really know about it and how much of it is bunk and how much of it is science and this sort of thing.
Well, what I did in my book was that in the New Age community, there's been a lot of talk about the fact that the Earth grids have changed. And for me, I didn't quite like this because it's just a buzzword. So what I did was I actually found that the Earth actually had various grids. One of them was found by a military person, Bruce Cathy,
yeah,
who discovered there was a diamond grid.
Yeah, I'm familiar with his work. He's written a couple of great books.
It's
amazing you brought that up. I was actually talking to a guy before I came to the show tonight about Bruce Cathy and about his ideas about nuclear weaponry. Anyway, that's a whole other story. But Bruce Cathy's a really interesting guy. He's still around, and he's very difficult to get a hold of. I've actually tried to get him on the program. But at any rate, please continue. But, yeah, I'm real familiar with his work. And for people who aren't, you should check out Bruce Cathy. Very interesting.
Yeah, and he discovered that the Earth had a diamond grid, which I was very excited to discover. He worked out that UFOs were always found to be traveling in straight lines, but only on certain places on the planet. And what he did was he took a lot of different sightings and worked out that the fact that these straight lines actually made an octahedron shape superimposed on the planet. That's one grid, the magnetic grid. Okay, so when you plot these different sightings out, it creates a diamond, an octahedron shape,
mm-hmm.
which is amazing. The other grid that I refer to in my book is the one that was discovered by the Russians. And basically, I don't spend a lot of time talking about this because simply there's so much information in my book. But in 1981, there was an article written by three Russian scientists, and they identified another Earth grid, okay? Now, this is the one that I believe that's been transformed. So in the New Age community, there's been channelings and information saying that the Earth grid is changing. Now, what happened with me was that I found a Russian paper that had been translated into English that actually said that the electromagnetic skeleton of the Earth was changing. But more than that, it was actually being changed by otherworldly processes.
Hmm.
And they were referring to these huge balls of light, plasma entities, which were literally changing the electromagnetic skeleton, the electromagnetic grid of the planet.
Hmm.
And these Russians were just beside themselves. They said, what on earth is going on? And they wrote this amazing report, planetary report. And I definitely recommend you can find it on the internet and read this report. It was published in 1998.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What I find amazing is that people haven't really picked up on this report, but they said that the grid, the electromagnetic skeleton, that's how they described it, the electromagnetic grid of the planet was changing, and it was being changed by these huge, huge plasma entities. And they said this is an inter-world process.
Okay. Yes, and if I could, I'll just mention that this is something that people familiar with my website, if you go to the front page there, you'll see. I've had this up there for a long time because I've been interested in it for a long time, and It's called The Planeto Physical State of Earth and Life.
That's the actual full name of it.
And it was primarily authored by a Russian doctor whose name is Alexei Dmitriev.
Right?
This he's a big time there. He was a member of the Russian Academy of Sciences and, you know, this whole bit. And, you know, Susan, I've always thought that the Russians do great science. I've always thought the Russian scientists were great because they're not dogmatic scientists. They pretty much will take the data and go with it. They don't get caught up in belief systems. And I think that the Russians really are ahead of the game when it comes to this whole planetary evolution thing, because I thought that paper
was
remarkable. Yeah.
Well, one of the things that totally encouraged me was that the week that I published my book, there was a press release that came out of Russia that said the world is facing a spiritual revolution. And they felt that they were going to help lead the world. And I just was totally excited by this because I felt that I was quite on my own in my thinking. I'm not on my own, but that was a real help to me at the time.
Hmm.
And also, I do quote Russian sources because they do understand that this is a spiritual process that we're actually going through. This is very important because at the moment we have a lot of talk about global warming. That's just a side effect of this massive transformation that's taking place.
Hmm.
So anyway, we were talking about grids. So there was a grid discovered by these Russians in 1981. I believe that is the grid that's been changed. It was a major change which stopped in 2002, and since that time we've had little updates. But the latest one we've now been told is the grid is like basically being crowned now. We have the new diamond paradise grid. And in my book, I talked about a historian, an anthropologist called Joseph Jockemans, who believed that we would see a new Christ grid. Other people refer to this as the Christ grid, and it's made up of geometry, double pentacles, equally spaced across the globe. And it is interesting because this has always been prophesied. This has always been prophesied that eventually we will see a new Christ grid. So this to me is very, very exciting. Metaphysical sources saying that we now have this new grid on the planet, and it will help us to move to a place of higher consciousness for mankind. And this is tremendous because as humans, we're electromagnetic beings, and we are very much as closely as tied to the environment. And if you change the electromagnetic grid of the planet, you also will also affect humans. So there's a sort of reciprocal relationship between the grid of the planet and us. The Mayan elders actually are very hot on this. They talk a lot about this relationship between the grid, the Earth's core, and humans. And so I try to also explain that in my book. To me, I am very, very excited about this whole concept of the new grid. And it's interesting, because of my Christian background, I do slightly interpret Christian thinking in a slightly different way. I see what's happening now on this planet is a delivery of Christ energies. It's energy that's come back. And this is very interesting for me because if you think of it in terms of the return of Christ, the return of Christ energies, and this massive changing, you know, the instability with the, you know, with the weather and the climate mm-hmm. change and the earthquakes and the floods and all this sort of stuff, this is really, really interesting.
What about?
It's really interesting to start. I'm starting to reinterpret Christian philosophy in terms of this whole massive space weather thing
mm-hmm.
And the changes on the planet. It's quite interesting.
You mentioned the return of this particular energy, and a lot of people, and even in the Christian conversation, people are talking about the return of Christ, so the intimation is that this is something that has been here before. I guess the question is, when was it here before, And why did it all go to hell? In other words, why does it have to? Is it ever going to happen where where it happens and it sticks?
I think this is to do with galactic cycles, and we've just and this is interesting because this is where John Major Jenkins comes through. Mm-hmm. I see it as that as we move around the galactic center, we've come to a point now, and I see it like a massive wheel. Mm-hmm. And the wheel has spokes on the wheel. And we've come to a point where we've hit a massive spoke on the wheel. And at this point, we get massive deliveries of energies from the galactic center. It's energies of cleansing, evolution, of change, divine energies. That's what I see them as. Okay, so we've hit this spoke on the wheel. And we've literally, I mean, this is what the Russians say, they can literally see this energy, this delivery mechanism in space, delivering these energies to our planet. And I see that this is something that happens, and that's where you get the philosophy of the end times. The end times is the end of this cycle and the start of a new point in the cycle.
I agree.
That's
with that,
what
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah, I agree
and
with
so
you.
So this is what's happening now. This is incredible because it's definitely, definitely happening. So we have the science and we have the metaphysics. We even have the Christian tradition that can actually help us interpret the times that we're actually living in now.
Interesting. What do you make of the solar activity? I mentioned earlier to you when we were talking off the air that, you know, I've been interested in watching the sun for a long time, and I know you are too, because that's where the great majority of the energy that gets distributed out to the rest of the solar system comes through our star. But it's been very active and changing and had some remarkable and inexplicable things happen on the surface of the sun over the last 10, 15 years. Would you like to remark on that at all?
Well, in my book, I actually start off by, there's a quote at the beginning of my book. In fact, I'm just going to read it to you now. And it's a quote by Tom Kenyon, who is a very respected metaphysician. And he said, "There was a highly catalytic energy coming from deep space, which is striking the great central sun of your galaxy and the sun of your solar system. This deep space energy that is affecting both the sun and your earth is essentially an energy of accelerating self-awareness and spiritual evolution." In 1989, we had the most massive geomagnetic storm. And it was the first time that our electrical engineers and scientists realized that our infrastructure, technological infrastructure on Earth, could be affected dramatically by the sun.
Right, right. It shut down the whole West Coast electrical grid in Canada and a whole bunch of stuff, I remember.
Oh, yes, absolutely. There was a just massive wipeout of certain systems. And we were just completely bombarded by this energy. And 1989 was a pivotal point. And what happened on the metaphysical side, we were told that as humanity had managed to raise their vibration, we'd spiritually evolved a little bit. And in that little bit of change, we agreed to move forward. And so we were sent this energy. And so the sun has been absolutely amazing. I mean, you know, this massive, massive bursts of energy. And what I've done on my website is to just do, like, to put them together, to see, you know, the sun exploding. We're getting these full halo explosions of energy. And some of them are just quite amazing. Massive, you know, billions of tons of plasma literally just exploding. The way the scientists describe it is it's like a blanket being thrown over a golf ball with the amount of energy that's coming our way. And it's also pumping up the electrical capacitance of the solar system.
Mm-hmm.
So even though we don't get direct hits like when you have a solar flare, it's still having an impact on the electromagnetic environment.
Right, right, right. Well,
the only way you can understand what's happening is if you understand the electric universe point of view, which is what I immediately, as soon as I realized that we lived in an electric universe, I started to see the parallels with metaphysical teaching. I started to understand how spiritual energy could be delivered to this planet and how the information we were given makes sense. It's fascinating, and since I wrote my book, I've recently discovered there's a whole new field of science being pioneered called plasma metaphysics.
All right. Well, look, I think, Susan, that's a good place to take a break, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Let's do that. We'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about the ideas of the electric universe and these new theories mm-hmm. of plasma physics and this sort of thing, okay?
Great.
Okay, everybody, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My guest is Susan Renison. She's been kind enough to get with us early on a Tuesday morning from her home in Northern Europe, in Norway, and we'll be speaking to her for another hour and a half, and we'll talk about her book called Tuning the Diamonds, among other things, okay? All right, it's Mike, and let's hear another song here from The Boon. We'll come back in a minute with Susan Renison. In the meantime, this one is called Cloud 8. It's Mike, who is to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Check Susan out on the web, by the way. It's Susan Renison, SusanRenison.com, SusanRenison.com, and you can link there from my site from here on out, okay? All right, everybody, one more time. This is The Boon. The song is called Cloud 8. Mike Hagen, Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia.
But they lost their sight.
Cloud 8. That's the Boone on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Mid-Missouri source for in-depth news, verse, talk, music of the world. And here's a quick promotion for an event that's coming up in just a couple of weeks here. Check it out.
Join KOPN for a weekend of rock and roll music to benefit community radio. Friday and Saturday, September 14th and 15th, 2 days, 18 bands, and a whole lot of fun. Don't miss it. That's Friday and Saturday, September 14th and 15th at the Blue Few on 9th Street in downtown Columbia. Information on the web at kopn.org or by phone at 815-9995.
Well, God save Abraham. Yeah, going to be good stuff. Not this coming weekend, but the following one, September 14th and 15th, Friday, Saturday at the Blue Fugue. Whole bunch of bands, and all to benefit community radio down here. Going to be a great, great time, and I'll be down there both nights and really looking forward to it. Hope you all can join us and join in on the great music that will be coming up your way in a couple weeks down there on 9th Street, okay? All right, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. We've got Susan Renneson on the line with us from her place in Norway. We're talking about planetary evolution, among other things. The book that she's written is called Tuning the Diamonds. You can find information about Susan on the web at susanrenneson.com. And we will get right back to her now and say hello.
Hi, hello. I'd like to also say at this point, there's two websites, actually. There's another one called joyfirepublishing.com.
Yes.
And
yes.
That is the one that talks a lot about the background to the book. And where I have whole sections on the electromagnetic universe, the sun, space weather, Mayan philosophy, I basically have a very nice collection of web pages that basically describes the background to my book. So I highly recommend them, especially for the images of the sun and understanding how the sun works and what's happening with the sun, because you will actually learn a lot from the visuals.
Yeah, they're
you know,
amazing.
That's not something I could do in the book.
Yeah,
so,
and so if you do that, if you go to susanrenneson.com, and then right on the left hand
of the book.
Yeah, it says more about tuning the diamonds. And
yeah.
Either that or the book image right there in the upper left, you can click that. That will take you over to Joyfire Publishing. And from there, there's a little menu on the left-hand side. And, of course, that's exactly what Susan's talking about, masters of the electric universe, the sun, space weather, solar system transformation, et cetera. Let's start at the beginning of that list. Before the break, we were talking a little bit about these new ideas of plasma physics and electric solar system, electric universe ideas. Maybe you could expand on that a little bit.
Well, it was a massive revelation, this whole understanding that we live on an electromagnetic universe. Because in the metaphysical literature, we were being told about the cosmic web. We were being told that there was the energy that pervades the universe, but it seems to be organized. So in the physics world, there's an understanding of the background that we have, what Einstein called space-time. In the metaphysical world, people were talking about the cosmic web. There's many different ways of describing this background energy that pervades the universe. Some people call it the universal field. It's structured. But out there in space, it just goes on to a big scale. So you have this web out in space. Some people even say, J. Alfred talks about the fact, do we live inside a huge brain? Because of the way that these connections are all connected to each other.
Right.
And how galaxies seem to be formed where you have these junctions of these strands of energy out there. So the whole concept of the universe being pervaded by plasma, but this plasma seems to be intelligent, it seems to have consciousness, it evolves, it's self-regulating, self-directing. And I've seen articles now in the mainstream press in the United Kingdom talking, what is this plasma that seems to have its own consciousness and evolves? What does that mean for us? And so you have this understanding that space is not empty. It is filled with this energy. Highly electrical highly electrically charged particles, thinly dispersed in space. So then you start to equate to this concept in physics of dark matter, dark energy. What? And then also in plasma physics, they talk about plasma in dark mode. And then, of course, that starts to help resolve the issues they have about, you know, how the universe actually works in cosmology. It's a big subject, and mm-hmm. What I do in my book is I take enough information from these sources to get my point across about what's happening on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
There are experts out there. I highly recommend the plasma physicists. There's a book called The Electric Sky by Don Scott, Professor Don Scott. I'd highly recommend that book because he talks about plasma, the electric universe, and specifically about plasma and the work of scientists that goes back 100 years.
Let's talk about how...
These are not new concepts. Mm-hmm. It's just that the importance of this is now becoming apparent. Space is not empty. It is filled with this energy. I would say it's spiritual energy.
Yeah.
And that's where it's a little bit different to other scientists.
Well, I mean, I think you can interpret it that way and still observe what we're observing. How does this connect or how does this relate to our sun? In other words, the revelation of the electric universe idea, how is it affecting us directly through our own solar system and through our own star?
Well, the sun is a huge ball of plasma. The sun itself is a plasma entity, and all the theories that we have of fusion and all that sort of stuff doesn't make sense in terms of a plasma entity. So we do have a situation now where solar physicists are basically starting to realize that they need to understand how the sun works in terms of a plasma entity.
Hmm.
And that is really quite interesting. So what's happening is as our solar system is traveling around the galactic center, it's literally hit what I call spokes, a section of the galactic, of this part of the galaxy, where the sun is actually being hit by this delivery mechanism. Okay? So energies are traveling through what I call the electric power lines in space, and it's affecting the sun.
So we're
getting these massive bursts. Now, the sun is quite quiet at the moment because the sun has an 11-year cycle. Well, it depends how you look at it, 22-year cycle, 11-year cycle, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But they're now predicting that the next solar cycle, when it ramps up, is going to be huge.
Mm-hmm.
NASA will admit it will be the biggest in 50 years.
Right.
That is as much as they will admit.
Right.
Other people think it will be a lot more than that.
Yeah, I've read
that. They are predicting that the next solar cycle is going to be huge. And so we have to understand in terms of how that's going to affect us on Earth. It's going to affect our satellite infrastructure, our communications infrastructure, our pipeline infrastructure, and the power grid infrastructure it will affect.
Hmm.
But humans... That's where I come in. That's where I want to inform people that they have to activate these diamonds to help them stabilize. And I talk about that in my book. Maybe we can talk about that at some point.
Yeah, we'll certainly talk about the individual and what they need to be doing to sort of deal with these new situations.
Yeah, so what I in my book, I talk about the controversy about the fact of the electric universe and what that actually means in terms of the standard belief in cosmology and also in terms of the information about the sun and how our sun works. Now we're getting reports saying, you know, that they understand that sound geometry and magnetism is fundamental to how the sun works. That's got nothing to do with the fusion model.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, our scientists have been stumped for 70 years because the outside of the sun is hotter than the surface of the sun. The surface of the sun is 6,000 Kelvin. The outside, the corona of the sun, is 2 million degrees Kelvin, right? Basically, the theories that they've been giving out for the last 70 years cannot possibly be right. You can only understand it in terms of plasma physics. So we've had this intransigence in the scientific world. Okay, but once you understand it in terms of an electric universe and the behavior of plasma, what is so amazing about plasma is you can do experiments in the laboratory and prove this.
Mm.
And they've actually done experiments where they've been able to generate massive high temperatures with plasmas and with magnetic fields. And then, but they won't apply it to the sun. But
right.
because of the situation now, and things getting so extreme with the sun, NASA and the rest of them are having to change. They're having to change their theories because otherwise they can't make sense of our reality.
Right.
And the sun is now becoming very, very important.
All right. Let's talk about other planets in the solar system. And if we're seeing effects on the sun, then we should be seeing effects on Earth, which we think we are. But we should also see effects on other celestial bodies in the same system. So are we seeing things on other planets?
We are. Mars. There's, you can find plenty of articles about global warming on Mars and the fact that the ice caps, well, the caps, what do you call them, ice caps, are melting on Mars. But also on all the other planets. Some people have done a lot of work on this. Richard Hoagland has done a lot of work. And there are also a few other people that have done work on this. There's been various changes on Venus, 2,500% increase in auroral brightness and changes, global atmospheric changes, and perhaps just decades. We're talking 30 years. Obviously, on Earth, there's massive worldwide changes, climatic changes, geophysical changes. We have a new electrojet. And in my book, I actually talk about this. And I say this is what the Mayans predicted as the return of the serpent rope. That is really quite interesting because I don't know any other author that's equated the return of the, the arrival of this serpent rope as being the new electrojet that's now actually what I call dancing around the equator of our planet.
Is this, this is an energy that's coming from...
Well, in plasma, in terms of plasma universe theories, when you have an electromagnetic body, excess electromagnetic energy will get stored around the equator as an electric current. And that's literally what we have now. So we have this excess of energy on the planet, and it's literally an electric current dancing around the equator. And I equate this to the new energy that metaphysical sources have been warning us or telling us has arrived. And this is energy that we can actually use. So this is really, really amazing for me to see the science and realize. But then in my book, I go even deeper and I say, wait a minute, the Egyptians knew about this energy and they actually have methods and ways of actually balancing, because this excess energy, it can either work for you or it can work against you.
Mm.
But anyway, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, I think we'll do that. We'll do that after the top of the hour here. But before we before we go to break, let's talk. You mentioned.
Well, I'm going through the planets now. Neptune is a really interesting one because there was a recent article about Neptune and that they realized that it seems to be showing global warming on Neptune, and that's basically now Pluto's no longer a proper planet in our solar system. Neptune is the one that's the furthest out, and yet there is a direct relationship between the changes taking place on our planet, on Earth, and the sun, the effects of the sun. So a lot of scientists think, wait a minute, what about all these other planets in our solar system? All of them have changed in the last 30 or 40 years, all of them. You can find a change for every single planet. And some of the changes are quite dramatic, like Mars and also Neptune. So it's interesting because I actually start off, I don't discuss much about global warming in my book. I just say that what's really happening is that we're experiencing evolution, and there's changes in all the planets, not just Earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I focus on the planetary physical report of the Russians, because they see this in terms of a spiritual transformation as well.
Yeah, there's a tendency by most scientists, I think, to maintain the idea of a closed system, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, the Earth is just this in a little box, and there's nothing outside of it that can affect anything that happens inside that box, except for the humans. We are in charge of everything. We do everything. And nothing else can do anything. Of course, Mother Nature can sort of show her hand every once in a while and make us feel silly, but then they go right back to it and act like they have full control of it. But it turns out that it's not a closed system. It's an open system, and there's all kinds of different things that are entering and leaving the system depending on where and when it is.
Mm. Well, also in my book, this is amazing for me because since I wrote the book, it's been published nearly a year now, there's been much stronger evidence about the effects of cosmic rays on our atmosphere, mm-hmm. which again is energy coming from an outside source.
Right.
And so we have, we've had the Great Global Warming Swindle, which is a beautiful documentary that discusses the effects of all the opposition to the concept of global warming. And we have scientists that have very strong views that the temperature effects that we are having now, or the discrepancies in the temperatures, can be caused by cosmic rays coming in and changing the cloud cover, and that also affecting temperatures. So this, I actually mentioned this very briefly in my book because I didn't want to focus on global warming. It's a huge subject in itself.
Mm-hmm.
We also have scientists called Singer and there's another chap as well, Dennis Avery and Fred Singer, I think they're called. And they wrote a book called Global Warming Every 1500 Years. And that's also, again, about cycles. This is also about the fact that the temperatures on the planet do change. They vary in terms of cycles. So it's very, very interesting. On my website, I document some of the changes and I provide links. Because at the end, I don't believe in reinventing the wheel. I want to link to these scientists with opposing views. Now, but there are also, if you go through the literature, there's many scientists that are highly skeptical that CO2 is the cause of global warming. But you will also find, especially if you go to my website, that they're saying that space weather is directly affecting our climate. And you have NASA actually measuring massive electric fields over the top of the biggest, most severe hurricanes. And you're now starting to see how the electromagnetic environment of the Earth is what's really driving the Earth's climate. They're now starting to see that lightning activity is strongly associated with hurricanes. So this is very, very interesting. This is a totally different understanding of what's driving our weather and our climate.
Yeah, there's another big hurricane brewing in the Pacific, I think. Actually, a couple of them right
Felix.
Now. Yeah, yeah.
And that's a really big one. I mean, we have a lot of alignments going on at the moment, astronomical alignments, and also events taking place. We have these meteorites, augurids, I think they're called, and we've just had so many different unusual astronomical events going on in a very short period of time. We have two lunar eclipses going on at the same, within a very short period of time,
mm-hmm.
and it's really affecting what's happening. The planet's going crazy.
When's the next
Absolutely.
Lunar eclipse? I know we had one just a week ago.
Yeah, that's right. We have two quite close together. So, I mean, there was a story about the sea was so churned up in Australia. Did you see that story about the cappuccino toast?
No.
The water just turned to froth, foam,
yeah.
and there was foam for 30 miles out to sea. And they showed you pictures of people covered in this foam on the beach. It was all foam. It was incredible pictures. And it just said this is freak weather conditions.
Hmm.
You know, where the sea was so churned up.
Right.
By cyclonic conditions.
Amazing.
But it created this foam, and it was just 30 miles out to sea, foam. It's incredible. But there's such amazing things happening on this planet now, and the conditions, the electromagnetic imbalance on the planet is immense now. Because this is part of the change. What I want to say is that this space weather is delivering new energy, new information. The morphogenetic fields that control all life on this planet, and we could go into discussion about morphogenetic fields, but they are being upgraded at the moment. The term that I've seen used is rebooted. It's been reprogrammed, And so now we're going to start seeing some very strange things on the planet. I also pay attention to what the crop circles are telling us. And there was one amazing one this summer, which was which I've called the Alice in Wonderland crop circle.
Why do you call it that? Why do you call it that?
Because it was, the picture was identical to a picture that's in that was used as an illustration for the book. And it's a picture of Alice, and she's in a corridor with this various doors on the on either side of the corridor, and there's a door at the end. And this crop circle was a perfect match to this illustration that was done for the book, Alice in Wonderland. And the interpretation of that is that we are going to be going into a new reality that's going to be so strange to us, it's almost going to be like Alice in Wonderland. And we've started to get these very strange things happening on the planet. And we had a beautiful example of this week, where we had this massive spider's web in Texas. Did you hear that story?
I did. I read it. Yeah, somebody put it up on my forum. Yeah.
The spiders all got together and decided to build this massive web that was 200 yards wide along the trail. Incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. There, I actually have. I've seen an all kinds of wild stories in the last week. You know, the mainstream news was reporting a story of the chupacabra being discovered in Texas or something. You know, something that most people would never ever hear on MSNBC or whatever, you know?
I think it's going to get really strange.
Oh, I think. Hang on. You're going to see stuff that people aren't going to believe. Yeah.
Well, this is what the this is why you can compare it to the Christian philosophy, because they also talk about the fact we're going to see signs and wonders. I see it scientifically. I see it that in this delivery of this space weather, and this cosmic rays are literally reprogramming these multidimensional fields that control all species on life. And I refer to the work of Rupert Sheldrake and
sure.
his understanding that all species and humans have their own individual sources of information that direct basically how we function and actually affect our DNA. That is being changed. And in the process, we're going to start seeing some really odd things, really strange things. And it's going to be like being, like we're going to feel like we're Alice in Wonderland. That's how it's going to be.
All right, Susan, that's another good place to take a break, okay?
Okay.
All right, we'll do it. We'll be back with Susan Renison in just a few minutes, folks. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. It's straight up 1 a.m. now on the 4th of September, 2007. And we'll play a piece of music here from my friends, The New Up. This one is called Benny Hinn. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Back in just a few minutes with Susan Renison. That's the new Up from their CD, Palace of Industrial Hope. And my name is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. I have another event I want to tell you all about coming up on September 5th. I think that's Wednesday at the Blue Note. My friends Kyle and Tony, who do Mystery Science Radio 3000 every Saturday night, Sunday morning. Wonderful radio show that those guys do every week. Anyway, they've got a special program, benefit, something going on. I don't know exactly what. Kyle gave me a flyer for it earlier, but I left it at the bar. So, anyway, I just wrote a note here, September 5th, Blue Note, Kyle and Tony. So check it out on the Blue Notes website or give us a call down here at KOPN to find out what it is exactly. But if Kyle and Tony are involved in it, I'm sure it will be fun and probably funny. So, anyway, back to Susan Renison. On the web, SusanRenison.com. And, Susan, before we get any further, I have a question just came up for that I think probably other people have as well. A person asks, how can we obtain a copy of your book here in the United States? So far, they say they've only noticed they can get it from the U.K. Is it available here?
Yes. Well, there's a U.S. distributor, and the website is velocityoflove.com. And on the Tune of the Diamonds, on joyfiedpublishing.com, there is a flashing data, a text. And if you click on that, it will take you to where you can find Tune of the Diamonds, the distributors. So I have a nice little system there where you can find, you know, if you're in Europe, if you're in America, if you're in the UK, wherever you can find a distributor. But in the US, the distributor, I think the website is velocityoflove.com, and you'll get a copy of the book at that point. But if you send me an email, I will just send you the link anyway.
Okay.
So if people contact me, then I will provide the link for a US distributor or wherever you are in the world.
All right, sounds good. And Susan is easily available and contacted through her website there at SusanRenison.com and also at Joyfire Publishing. So, okay, let's continue our conversation. I think it's about time we start talking about individual actions and how these things are affecting us personally and what we might be doing to help ourselves and help others. Let's talk a little bit about the personal, practical side of this whole thing. And in fact, you seem to think that there's actually a necessary component that we actually need to figure this stuff out for our own well-being.
I do think that, actually. I'm not... I'm seeing lots of channelings out there, and what I'm doing is literally just taking it through the database of information that's in my head. I'm not the sort of person that sees everything as rosy, everything is going to be wonderful. I see it very practically. And I don't sort of try to whitewash anything. That's what I'm trying to say. With this energy that's being delivered to the planet, there is an excess current, and it's literally being stored around the equator of the Earth, and that's the new equatorial electrojet.
Is that something that's being reported anywhere?
Yes, it is, but it's only in the scientific world.
Mm-hmm.
This is what's so amazing. I've had to do some serious research to find this information, and I've had to work very, very hard
mm-hmm.
to interpret what our scientists are talking about amongst themselves, but it's not going into the mainstream press.
Right?
So this, after the 1989... geomagnetic storm.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, we had this new electrojet. Now, there's ones around the poles that have been there forever, but there's basically the excess energy became a new electrojet, and it's of concern to our satellite infrastructure people because it affects the quality of the satellites. So that's why they started to get very concerned, and they've been sending rockets up there to investigate it and all the rest of it. So that, I believe, is the serpent rope that the main elders predicted. And what it's doing is it's erratic. It sort of moves, and every now and again it reverses its action and it goes in the opposite direction around the planet.
Hmm.
That is pumping up the frequencies of light that we use to balance our brain. It's literally... It's increasing the intensity of the Schumann waves. We've had a lot of New Age people saying, yes, that the Schumann waves are increasing in frequency. I dispute that. what is being happened, they are slightly changing and they are slightly higher. However, the main effect is that they're much stronger signals. Much stronger signals now. Hmm. And it's being caused by this electrojet that's pumping up. That's the way I describe it. These frequencies of light. Now, in terms of humans, what that means is that the signals that you would respond to and that help to balance you, balance your brain, are coming much stronger. But we're also emotional beings. And this is also affecting our emotions as well. So whereas if you're stable, these energies will actually make you more stable. If you are unstable for any reason, or emotionally unstable for any reason, you will fly off much quicker. You will go from a state of being stable to unstable much faster in this environment. And so you are now seeing a lot of what I call imbalance in people. They're being affected by the environment. And it's because the people need to understand what's happening and what they can do. And I see this as very much carrot and stick. I see it as part of the evolutionary process. We are being encouraged, let's say, to evolve spiritually, deal with our stuff, and to move forward and become empowered. But however, if you won't do that, then you will be dramatically affected by the conditions on this planet.
So it's
that's
sort of
why
like
people
need
to, sorry?
You can't sort of opt out. It's
no.
It's going to get you one way or another. It's a matter of how you end up dealing with all this new energy.
This is a planetary upgrade. Everything on the planet. The way the Russians describe it is that every single living thing on this planet is going to be getting a quality control inspection to see whether they can comply with the new conditions. This is serious.
Hmm.
Everything is being affected. Everything.
You know,
are being encouraged to move forward and to evolve, spiritually evolve.
You know, Susan, I'm the director of quality control at a little manufacturing company here in town.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very familiar with these concepts, and that's a great metaphor to use for what might possibly be coming down the pike here.
Yeah, it's really amazed me when I read this in that Planetary Physical Report. That's what they say.
Hmm.
Quality control inspection.
That's great. Oh, man.
Oh, my God. So this is what's happening now. People are freaking out. And it's because we need to deal with our emotional problems. In my book, I talk about how the emotions are related to our electromagnetic field. And all this. People have been starting to do this.
Hmm.
They've started to deal with their problems, things in their past, their karmic stuff and all this. But it's important because of the times that we're living in now.
Let's talk.
Very, very important.
Let me ask you a question. You've mentioned the Maya a couple times, and we've skirted around it a little bit. And we also have this idea of the alignment of the Earth or the solar system with the central mass of the galaxy. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that and whether they're, you know, the relationship between them, and is this just a marker in time that the Maya were pointing out, or is it actually a physical event that you think, I don't know, maybe you could give your position on the whole 2012 business.
Yeah, it's definitely a physical event. We are directly lining up with the center of our galaxy. And I do refer to the work of John Major Jenkins in my book. There's about one page that I dedicate to this understanding, maybe one, two pages, but I dedicate to this understanding
right.
of the fact that this is an electromagnetic entrainment that's taking place.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we're directly lining up bullseye to planet Earth, and that in doing so, we are getting hit with this stream of energy. And we're going to be getting waves upon waves of energy. And I believe that this is the prophesied new golden age that we've been told about. The main elders predicted that we would, the new age would be dominated by space or the ether. And I equated this to the whole concept of space weather. Remember, this is brand new. This concept of space weather is a brand new concept that our scientists have made up to explain this massive bombardment of cosmic rays, solar energy, galactic energy that we're getting on this planet now.
Right.
So this is incredible. Once I discovered this concept of this space weather, and then I married it up with the Mayan philosophy, all of a sudden it started to make sense. My book is the big picture. And what I've done is there's many people that have got pieces of the puzzle. What I try to do is to give an overview of what's really happening on this planet now. So we've got this, I have tremendous respect for the Mayan elders. What I've done, though, is that they talked about balance, but I don't feel that it was sort of, people could really understand what they meant. They kept talking about we have to make the balance on this planet. The metaphysical community should have understood this more, but I'm not sure how many people were really paying attention to this.
Hmm.
So since 1989, we've had new energy on the planet. Some people realized and started to take this energy and use it to develop themselves spiritually, to become more balanced. Okay? Now we've come to the point where it's now, as part of our evolution, there's going to be a first wave of people that change. And I'm beginning to wonder if this is even going to be a physical transformation. Okay? So
do you think that if we do start to see changes in people, whether they're physical or otherwise, do you think that it will be apparent in the way that they are? In other words, the skills that they will they be able to do things that other people can't do, or will they just be smarter, or will it be apparent?
Well, we've already got these children. I'm not a great advocate of this indigo children and those little crystal children
I have ideas.
I see it as a cop out, quite frankly. Mm. Oh, look at the children, aren't they wonderful?
Right.
They can do all these things, which means we don't have to do it.
Right.
I'm a little bit, I actually think we've been misled there, because I've come across research that says that the intelligence, the average intelligence on this planet has been increasing over the last few decades. And some people see that this is also associated with galactic cycles.
Hmm.
The average intelligence on the whole planet is increasing. And it's actually called the Flynn effect.
Huh.
So I'm a little bit skeptical about just pointing out these brilliant children,
uh-huh,
because the whole average is increasing as well.
All right, okay.
So it's, and that's why you can start talking the conspiracy theories at this point. But anyway, we won't go there.
Right. Well.
So anyway, in terms of the massive changes taking place on this planet, and the effect on humans, I actually want to change the subject a little bit, because we're also seeing this spiritual energy in terms of the orbs.
Mm.
You know, people are taking pictures, digital pictures, and all sorts of stuff is appearing in their pictures.
Yeah, that's...
And this is all part of this change. I actually see that the background ether is changing. And in the metaphysical world, they talk about the veil thinning.
Mm.
So we're starting to see this spectrum of entities out there, especially the orbs.
What do you make of this whole orb business? And for the people who've never heard about it before, tell them what it is a little bit.
Well, I actually believe it's divine energy, spiritual energy, because you've seen a lot of orbs where there's spiritual gatherings. There's even, on my blog, I link to... I think it's just like a local website, a news website, where they went into a church, and people have been reporting for months that they're taking pictures and they're seeing all these orbs, and so this camera crew went in there, and they even picked up pictures of these orbs too. So there's actually been the first orb conference, I think it was in Sedona, was in May this year, and in the UK there's been stories, even in the mainstream, about this orb phenomena.
Huh.
Okay, so I was just utterly amazed, because it even looks like there was a guy, a professor, who's connected to the Vatican, and he's actually on an international theological commission, who has a collection of 100,000 pictures of these orbs. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't know many people that have a private collection of 100,000 of anything. So I see this as being a Vatican collection. So they have obviously got an issue because they've got to explain to their flock what on earth is happening.
Yeah, that's going to become more and more difficult for them, I have a feeling.
I mean, I see this as spiritual energy, and we all have this energy around us helping us. Okay?
Mm.
And if people get frightened, you know what I say to them? We don't have a problem teaching our children about fairies. Mm. Have you watched Shrek?
Right.
You have the Shrek 1 and 2, you have the fairies and the balls of light.
Right.
I read somewhere, and I've read so many books, it's really difficult for me to pinpoint this, but originally the fairies were huge things, and they were downgraded by the church. Now they've got a problem because they're going to have to upgrade them back again.
Yeah, the creatures of the wood, they haven't really gone they haven't gone away. It's just we sort of pushed them out of our consciousness, but they're still there all the same, I think.
So now, so I see this, and I have a very positive view about this. In my book, I try to explain it scientifically. I try to explain what this plasma energy is and this concept of them being magnetic entities. I try to give a scientific theory as to why we would have this relationship with this spiritual energy, this plasma energy.
Is this what you think? Is this what you think that the orbs are, some sort of a plasma effect?
It is.
Mm-hmm.
In my book, I point out the existence of a previously top-secret government report, a British military report investigating plasmas. When they finished, they tried to hide it for 5 years, but the UFO people were very intrigued. And so they used the... there's also an act where you can actually request that the government release information, Freedom of Information Act in the UK.
Sure.
So this is a very interesting report. It's a huge report. I think it's like over 300 pages. It could even be 400 pages. It's a huge report. And basically, at the end of this report, they basically said, yes, there's a plasma phenomena, no threat. No threat. It's just, it's part of the universe. This is a natural energy. You know, plasma takes up something like 99.999% of the universe.
Right.
It's just part of the consciousness. Everything in our universe has consciousness. There's nothing dead in the universe. And this energy can self-organize into different structures. So it can create these power lines in space. And through the power lines, you can actually get plasma traveling along these power lines as orbs as well. And the orbs are huge or they're small. And you can have this on a sort of galactic level. You can have this on a cosmic level, whatever, on different levels. And also... then you have it on the sort of the tiny, macroscopic, the sort of multidimensional level. This is totally fascinating for physicists, and you can also use current theories to actually explain this. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I, at this point in my book, I tried to a little bit to talk about this, but not too much because it was distracting from the rest of the book. But yes, quantum loop theories, yes, you can start to equate what this is using standard physics theories.
All right. DNA and our actual physical makeup, we know that cosmic rays are responsible for evolutionary changes in the past. This is going to pick up, and do you think we'll be able to actually identify changes in our own or others' DNA?
Well... what I've done is that since my book was published, we've had more and more reports come through that various different species on this planet seem to be accelerating their evolution, and that changes are taking place in DNA within decades. They used to say that things took hundreds of thousands of years. No, it doesn't.
Right.
We're having this delivery of energy, and it's highly catalytic. Catalytic means that it makes things happen much quicker. It speeds things up.
Mm-hmm.
So we're having this. So they will admit to the animals, plants, and butterflies and things changing quickly. They seem to have a reticence talking about human beings.
Mm-hmm. That's
right?
Yeah. Seems to be a block there.
I believe that we are changing. I believe that humans are changing.
Oh, I believe it too. I believe it too. And I talk to lots of different people, you know, from lots of different perspectives, and you know, you're certainly not alone in the idea of great change on the horizon. I think you know, we're all trying to parse out what exactly is happening and how it's happening, and this is one of the things that you're adding to the conversation, you know. But I think that argument aside, very, very few people will say that there isn't something going on.
I think it's becoming very obvious that something huge is taking place. And, you know, I think the thing with global warming and blaming humans is just a cop-out. It's just to focus humans on just, and it's about a control thing. I don't think the carbon stuff is just about making money. It's just getting people to focus on themselves. They don't want to see the human as a sort of a galactic human, a cosmic human, aware of their place in the cosmos. Mm-hmm. But it's happening anyway. It's happening anyway. So, yes, some of the metaphysical stuff that I'm reading, I'm trying to interpret scientifically. The massive blasts of energy that are coming our way now is going to affect our atmosphere, and there's going to be a lot more ultraviolet light coming through. That will affect our DNA. That will reprogram our DNA. What I'm saying to people with the diamonds is the idea is that you want energies to help you and to benefit you.
Right.
And the diamonds act as a sort of a filter. They will encourage the frequencies of light that will support you, and they will deflect the frequencies of light that won't help you. And in my book, I do the science. My book is not an easy read. I didn't do it to tickle people, because quite frankly, there's plenty of other stuff out there that you can read if you want entertainment. My book is to explain these massive transformations on the planet, what's happening and how it can affect you. And I've tried to find theories that give us a greater understanding. And I believe that it's very rare for one person to be given information and not to go to anybody else. So there's a vast resources out there. And basically, I had to do a lot of work pulling together this information. And so I talk about our multidimensional reality and why geometry is so important. Now, we have esoteric societies that have known this stuff forever. Information that came from the Egyptians and before that.
Is this?
And we have various different societies with this hidden information. It's now coming out because we need to understand this. We need to understand what this geometry is about.
Is this a reference to so-called sacred geometry?
Sacred geometry, that's right. In my book, I talk about the diamonds. The diamond seems to be everywhere. You know, the actual shape seems to impact and influence cosmic evolution even. It's amazing. There's something special about the octahedron. And so right at the end of my book, I talk about the Great Pyramid, because that is only half of octahedron. But I actually explain that I believe that it had a function for balancing this planet. I've actually, we know this, other authors talked about the fact that it seemed to be streaming in cosmic energies. And I believe it had a function to balance this planet. There's evidence, if you read the book, the work of Chris Dunn, there seems to be evidence. Pyramid in Greek means fire in the middle. I believe there was evidence that the pyramid, when it's fully operational, because it was intended as a machine, when it was fully operational, it created an etheric double, and it turned into an octahedron.
Wow, that's amazing.
Right?
You know, I've interviewed Chris Dunn. I think he's remarkable, and his book, Giza Power Plant, was one of the best explanations that I've ever heard, frankly, about what's going on there on the Giza Plateau.
Right, okay. It was designed as a machine, and the machine, I believe, is designed to balance the planet. okay? And this is the whole concept of these diamonds is that they balance forces. They balance the cosmic forces with earth forces. And this is, this knowledge goes back to the Egyptians and before that. Now, the Russians have started to build massive pyramids. They've been building them for about 18 years now or something. Million-dollar pyramids, huge ones, to help balance the forces on this planet. Right? So this concept, there was even a story this week about the Germans. They want a pyramid too. This is really, really interesting what's happening on this planet.
When you talk about the pyramids that, that the Russians are building, do you mean, give me an idea of scale. I mean, you know, I mean, are they,
oh,
obviously...
140-foot high pyramid, huge ones.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're planning a 288-foot one. So, I mean, the bigger they are, the more impact they have. And then what the Russians did was they did experiments where they put things inside the pyramids, like they put salt and pepper and rocks and crystals and things like that. And then they did experiments to see what the impact would be on people. They actually fed to prisoners salt and pepper that had been kept inside a pyramid for a period of time. And they noted that the behavior of the prisoners changed. They became less violent and they became more evolved. They became calmer and more balanced and everything.
Huh.
The Russians got so excited with these experiments, they even took some rocks that had been held in these pyramids and took them up to the International Space Station.
Huh.
And I'm like, this is old news, this is not new, but people don't know it. And the reason, they need to understand what these pyramid energies do. They seem to create a balance. Once you have a balance of energies, then it allows for evolution.
Hmm.
So they also affected the ozone there. They actually felt that there was energy coming off the top of these pyramids that were actually repairing the ozone layer as well. That's what they felt.
Amazing.
So they seemed to... They also noted that some of the pyramids, the crops around the pyramid actually dramatically increased their production. So they seemed to have environmental effects. They also... Things like earthquakes, they noted that when you have these big pyramids, that they seem to regulate the pyramids. So instead of one big earthquake, you have lots of little tremors. So they seem to sort of help there as well. So I find this interesting, and the reason for that is because it's the shape. It's that particular shape seems to work with subtle energies. It seems to compel them into a state of balance, and that's what we're looking for. Especially as things get really hectic on the planet. Now, I want to talk about change. If you have an energetic system, and it's stable, you can't change it. What you have to do is to bring that system down into a state of chaos and then push it into a new direction.
Mm.
And that's exactly what's happening on this planet now. The energies are coming, and it's creating this chaos. But there's a purpose to the chaos. That's why I'm not really into all this doom and gloom stuff. That's why I talk about evolutionary change.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a necessary part of the process. Now, what I found recently is our scientists say, look, if you have a complex energetic system and you try to change it, you better do it quick. If you don't do it quick, it will fail. So these changes are going to be relatively quick in geological time,
mm-hmm.
because otherwise it will fail. And that's what our scientists are telling us. I'm going, I love it. I love it when these scientists explain to me what's going on the planet. The Earth is a complex energetic system, and the changes to maintain the stability, okay, it will seem like it's chaotic, but it will only be for a very short time, and then the result will be a new Earth. That's what we're being promised, and that's what's happening. That's what we're going through now. So also, the last fortnight or so, and there was also another report about evolutionary changes, and they said that if you have many different goals, and evolutionary goals, it seems to speed up the process. The more complex, the more evolutionary goals, the quicker the process has to be. And that's exactly what we're seeing now. That's why evolutionary biologists are just beside themselves, because they're seeing things happening so quick.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what, Susan, we're going to have to take another quick break here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But we'll come back and we'll have one more segment here to finish things up, okay?
Great, okay.
All right, hang in there, everybody. We've got Susan Renison. We'll talk with her for another 20 minutes or so in just a moment. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. And we will hear a song here from the Boone. And we'll come back in just a few minutes with Susan Renison on the web at SusanRenison.com. And you can link over there from my site at MikeHagan.com. From here on out, we'll have this entire program up on the web in the next 24 hours or so, okay? All right, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. One more time, this is The Boone. I think the song is called To the Sea. the Boon from Fool's Gold. The song is called To the Sea. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. About 21 minutes before the 2 a.m. hour in the United States, that is. Of course, it's closing in on 9 o'clock in the morning in Northern Europe, in Norway, where my guest is situated right now. Isn't that right, Susan?
That's correct.
Well, it's been a pleasure to talk with you, and I'm so glad that we got to do it on sort of a reasonable hour, at least. Wasn't in the middle of the night, at least, and maybe a little bit early, but not too bad.
Not too bad at all, yeah.
Well, okay, let's continue where we left off. A lot of people, of course, are interested in we've sort of been, you know, working towards this all night, but for individuals and people in the middle of what we think is happening, not necessarily about to happen. I mean, we're in the middle of this stuff now. It may increase, certainly, but people are, you know, looking for good ideas on how to better situate themselves for the future. Maybe you could give a little bit of what your own advice might be.
Well, for me, I see this as a massive spiritual transformation, and I'm very much paying attention. I'm dedicated to paying attention to the messages that we are being given and paying attention to the times. Now, I'm, as a practitioner, energy practitioner, I'm actually activating people's energy fields and to working with these diamond energy fields. And also, as part of the evolutionary process, you have a template around you. You have an energy field around you. From the moment you were born, before you're born, the moment of conception, there is an electromagnetic field that forms around the fetus, and that is like an organizing field. It controls everything about you. It holds all your information. It also holds your karmic stuff as well. So what I've been doing is I've been working with this field. It's evolving at this time. You will always get a change in the electromagnetic field before it manifests in the physical. And so this equates to previous teachings about people's subtle bodies and things like that. But there is a new field forming around humans, so I've been working with that and with these diamonds. The most important thing is that there are various meditations that you can use to trigger these diamonds and also to stabilize your core energy. So directly down the center of your body, there is a core of energy, and it's got various different names. But what it does is it helps to allow cosmic and earth energies to flow through you. You are basically an electrical circuit, and that is the sort of primary circuit that you have. So the idea is to encourage people to allow this flow of energy to move up and down inside them in a balanced way. I actually talk about the Egyptians. They understood this, and they actually worked to help maintain a balance in the body, and that's one of the reasons why I believe they lived a long time.
Hey, Susan, let me ask you a question with regard to the diamonds. There's been some reports that I've actually seen in some scientific publications that talk about the pineal gland or the pineal gland, and the fact that there may be some sort of crystalline structure inside the pineal gland. And the pineal gland, I think, is important in lots of different mystical traditions and all this stuff. Maybe you could talk about that if you think it's relevant.
I mentioned in the book, because I talk about diamonds everywhere, you actually have magnetite, which are basically little octahedron type crystals, actually in the brain near the pineal gland. And they actually help, I believe, to attract certain frequencies of light. As part of our consciousness and part of our spiritual development, the most sort of spiritual energies are attracted to this part in the brain. So to me, it's really quite fascinating. I talk about this a little bit in my book, because obviously I cover a lot of many different subjects. So yes, and in fact it's actually quite interesting, because I've also highlighted on my blog that when you have people in a certain, in a sort of coma state, when they're basically in a very sort of low state of consciousness, they've had some kind of illness, and they're not quite in a coma, but they're in a semi-coma. If you stimulate the thalamus area with the electromagnetic energies, it will actually help them to recover their state, proper consciousness. So this is very interesting. You should mention that. Yes, magnetite, it's little crystals. They're actually in the brain, in the pineal area, and just outside that area. And yes, they do attract certain frequencies of light. We're basically light beings, and we basically attract energies. We attract energies, and we also give off energies as well.
Mm-hmm.
We're part of this sort of a soup of energy almost.
Right.
Right. It's just that we think we're physical and that we finish at our skin, but in fact that's not correct. We actually have an energy field around us. That's changing, that's evolving. I'm telling people it's a very good idea, especially if you're interested in your spiritual evolution, to protect your energy field at this time. Now, the reason I say that is because we've been warned, and I didn't realize this when I finished my book. I knew that we would be getting energies coming space weather, and that would be helping to knock people around. The fluctuating fields will affect you as an electromagnetic person, electromagnetic body.
Uh-huh.
But also, I believe we've moved to a new stage in the planetary evolution, and literally old energies are leaving the Earth. They're going back to the Galactic Center for Recycling. And I use this really strange language, but to me, that's how I use it. I use everyday language as much as I can. So what's happening, when we had the Peru earthquake, there was this phenomenon of these quake lights, literally massive bursts of white light coming out of the ground. You can go onto the internet.
There's people
that were, I don't know whether it was mobile phone images or security cameras, but there was this phenomena of this white light, quake lights coming out of the ground. We've been told that that energy is very harmful to humans, and that it's not just it's not a local phenomena. This energy will spread around the Earth because it's light. So we have to protect ourselves from this low frequency emissions. That's the scientific name for them. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So I see this is that with the massive change, there is chaos. And that is part of the process. So what we have to do is protect ourselves. We need to turn on these diamonds in our energy fields. They're there. They've always been there. We just need to trigger them. And in that process, that will help to protect us. Now, some people have got this down to a fine art. There are practitioners working with these diamonds who understand what to do and how to do it. This is ancient knowledge. It's been knowledge that's been known for a very long time and has been hidden, all right? This, I call this sacred geometry. There's nothing evil or nasty about it. It's just knowledge is power, and some people wish to maintain as much power as possible. So we're moving to a stage now where this knowledge has to go through into the mainstream as part of our evolution. We need to start to empower each other, not keep putting each other down, which has been the norm on this planet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right? So there's a science behind this. There's an understanding behind this. I'm working with these energy fields. The diamonds are very important. You could actually imagine yourself inside a pyramid. Sorry, inside two pyramids, and the two pyramids are back-to-back, which create the octahedron, or a diamond. Okay,
mm-hmm.
This is complex, actually, thinking. And it's four-sided. Now, there's some debate now. Some people imagine the diamond, the center, being at their waist. You can actually lower that. You basically just imagine yourself inside a diamond.
Mm.
And when you do this, it will actually compel the subtle energies to actually move into a state of balance. Okay, so if you imagine that the apex of this octahedron, that is where your core energy comes out. And it will actually encourage your subtle energies to come into a state of balance. What you're doing as you're imagining this is that you are creating, you're actually triggering this energy field that you have around you. It's always been there. This is an energy field that has always been. All humans have this. And I see this diamond as like a interdimensional energy that we all have. All right. So I see this. I'm just working with people now to help trigger as many diamonds as possible.
Do you think that whatever's happening on the planet requires any particular participation from human beings, or do you think that whatever's happening is going to happen one way or the other, and you know we're sort of along for the ride, and those of us who can sort of make it through the narrow neck will indeed do that, make it to the next part of the plan or the next section of the game or whatever, or do you think that it's sort of you know, not like that?
I see that the terms and conditions of living on this planet have changed, and that it's up to us whether we wish to comply or not.
Hmm.
That's how I see it, and it's quite a tough stance that I have on this. So I see that there's people who are willing to evolve and to move forward. Some people have already worked this out, and they've been given permission for their DNA to change and to move forward with the changes. Other people, maybe they don't understand these things. They have a low state of consciousness and they don't wish to evolve. There is some debate about what's happening here as to the people, the naysayers, let's say.
How do you... I'm sorry, but this is sort of related. How do you eventually see the levers of power being or changing hands? In other words, obviously something is going to have to happen to remove power from the people who are currently in power, and not just in the States, anywhere, you know, all around the world, in other words.
The way I see it is that we've been told that they're very powerful, but I see it is that the change is taking place on the planet and will be affecting everybody. You know, it's like when there's a dark room and you put light in there, even if it's just a candle, it changes the whole state.
Mm-hmm.
So I see... that they will change. They have to. It's part of the process. The question you have is the resistance to change.
Right.
And there's different viewpoints. Because basically, what I've been looking at is the science associated with this evolutionary change. And I've been stunned to find that some evolutionary biologists believe that there will be a split of humanity. They believe that it's possible for humanity to split. I actually think we have been given messages that this will occur. So I feel that the idea is to protect your energy field, protect your consciousness, evolve and move forward. Those that don't, there will be a parting of the ways, sorting out from the wheat of the wheat from the chaff. This is also very biblical, actually.
Hmm.
And so it's interesting because we've had crop circle messages saying the same thing. So when you have the scientists saying this, and you get metaphysical sources saying this, I take it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So it's up to us. Do we want to move forward? If you're going to stay on this planet, and the idea with this planet is, if you die, you're going to come back anyway. Then I believe in reincarnation, and we have scientific proof that somehow the spirit seems to live on. You can actually, scientists have actually recorded that on the moment of death, a massive pulse of light leaves the body. So that stays. That doesn't die. You will come back because this earth is a school and that we're here to learn lessons.
Hmm.
But the school is changing. And it's interesting because we're being told the school is now going to become a paradise. It might take a while for it to happen, but there is massive changes afoot.
Hmm.
The people who... have been running things, running the show at the moment. I believe there's been a tremendous amount of panic because they only know how to play the game one way.
I feel that too.
And so I feel that what's happening now is the rules are changing, and it's not going to be as easy to play the game the way they used to play it. Let's put it like that.
Well, I think that's a wonderful place to sort of wrap it up, Susan. It's been... couple hours already. The time always goes so much faster than I think it will.
Yeah.
Fantastic, though. Thank you so much for spending the time with us this morning and for being on the program.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. It's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure to talk with you. We'll give the website out one more time. It's Susan Renison, SusanRenison.com, and Joyfire Publishing is the sort of related website there. And anything else? Would you like to give out an email address or something like that, Susan, before you go?
You can contact me at info@joyfirepublishing.com or you can use Susan at SusanRenison.com.
Okay, no problem. And we will have this program up in the archives, like I say, in the next 24 hours or so, and we'll get it out there and share it with some other people, okay?
Lovely. Thank you very much.
Wonderful. Take care of yourself, okay, Susan?
Thank you.
Susan Renison, everybody, on the web. One more time, SusanRenison.com. My name is Mike Hagan. On the web at Mike Hagan, HAGAN.com. And those two sites will soon be linked up from here to eternity. So, anyway, it's been a pleasure, as usual, tonight. Great experience talking with Susan Renison tonight. And I hope you all enjoyed the program. And we will come back and do it again next week with Kent Daniel Benkowski. We'll do a special 9/11 program next week. And I'm sure there'll be fireworks to discuss then as well. All right, so everybody, thanks again. One more time, hello and goodbye to all the people in the chat room. Sorry I didn't get a chance to really chat much tonight. We're busy with the program, but I'll try to do my best to backtrack and see if there's anything there that I could help out with or see how much I missed. But anyway, it's always great to see y'all chatting and talking along with us as we do the program. So we'll head out with one song here from the new Up. We've heard some music tonight from a couple of my favorite new girl bands, The Boon from Kansas City and The New Up from San Francisco, California. This one more time, off Palace of Industrial Hope. The song is called Skylight. It's The New Up, and you're hearing it here on Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Stick around. We got Ruth with Crash Landing to roll on here. Or roll in on here, I should say, in just about 4 minutes. And she'll be playing some good music for you for the rest of the evening, okay? All right, it's Mike one more time, Radio Orbit on the web, MikeHagan.com. Thanks for listening. We'll get all back with you next week.